Hello, and welcome to Fundraising as a Female Founder, the podcast all about how to raise funds for your business as a woman. I'm your host, Alice Audley. With less than 1p in every pound of venture capital investment going to all female-founded companies, it's time to start asking some very hard questions about the fundraising landscape. On this podcast, I will speak to women who have either raised money, are raising money, are an angel, work in venture capital, or work within companies' investment teams, and get their views, advice, and lessons about how to successfully raise funds as a female founder. Who knows, I may speak to a couple of men who have invested in female-led companies too. So without further ado, you're listening to Fundraising as a Female Founder. I hope you enjoy the series. Hello, dear guest. Welcome to the podcast. Please, could you introduce yourself? Who are you and what do you do?
Hello, Alice. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of yours. My name is Lucy Wright and I am the co-founder of Nice, and we're a future wine company with a range of wine in a can and most recently wine in boxes, which you can find across the country in places like Sainsbury's, Ocado, on Virgin Atlantic flights, at lots of festivals, cinemas and theatres.
And how did your entrepreneurial journey start? Is it something that you always knew that you wanted to do? And where does this go back to?
So I left university and I thought that I wanted to be an interior designer. And then after doing a few internships in the interior design world, I realised that it probably wasn't actually the industry for me. And my entrepreneurial journey came about in a way through some really good timing. I've been quite fortunate to experience a number of quite good timings in my life. I was catching up with an old friend from school called Anna, and she told me that she was writing a business plan for this on-the-go breakfast idea that her and her mum had sort of developed. And I just really liked the sound of it. It just really got me inside. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of like gut feel, oh, I'm really interested in this. But I said, oh, I like the sound of this. You know, is it something I could get involved in? So we got talking, and then very, very quickly, we just started working together. It was perfect because we'd just left university. You know, we didn't have mortgages. We didn't have any other jobs. So we started working on this business idea. And then sort of before we knew it, we were raising a bit of money. We were building the brand. We were finding a factory to make the products. And then we launched Cuckoo a year later into Selfridges. And it was a yogurt pot which had fruit and oats and linseed in. So if you've ever been skiing, it's Bersha Muesli. So we launched that, and then we rolled the products out into places like Tesco and Waitrose and Ocado. We ran that company for 4 years. We had a lot of highs. We had a lot of lows. I personally probably wouldn't launch a product again that is chilled with a short shelf life. And eventually, after 4 years of running the business, we sold it, which sounds far more glamorous than it was. We didn't make any money from it, so lots of people would see that as a failure. But without wanting to sound super cheesy, I don't see it as a failure at all. It was an amazing experience, the best business school I ever could have gone to. And then from there, I didn't really fancy working for anyone else. So I jumped into consulting, helping SME food and drink businesses build their business plan, but mainly build their sales strategy. Sales is really my thing. It's really what gets me out of bed in the morning. Helped them understand different route to markets, how you pitch your product to Tesco, etc. And then during that time, I met Jeremy, who was leaving Propercorn, having built their international business. He was also leaving to become a consultant. And him and I got talking. And on the third time of meeting, I said, look, I don't really want to be a career consultant. I feel like I've got a bit more to give. So I'd really like to set up another business. I think I'm ready to go again. I think apparently setting up a business, it's like childbirth. Not that I've ever given birth. You forget all of the pains. And I was at the stage where...
How long did that take to forget the pain?
That was 2 years of forgetting the pain. So I was ready to go again.
It's like a relationship. They say it takes half the time to get over it.
Yes, exactly. And Jeremy and I knew that we wanted to launch a company that was in the food and drink space because that's what we really knew. We wanted it to be either creating an entire new category as someone like Seedlip did, or disrupting a big existing category as someone like BrewDog did. So we decided to go to America, see what the food trends were over there. But we didn't get that far because a week later, I was mindlessly scrolling through Instagram, as us millennials do, and I spotted a wine in a can. And I traced it back to America. I became quite obsessed and quite excited by it very, very quickly. And once I looked into the American market, I could see how much the category was growing over there. I just loved all of the brands. They were modernizing wine. They were bringing it into the new age. A lot of them were run by really awesome females. And they were really making wine far more functional and just far more approachable. And then I spent a lot of time looking at the UK wine market, you know, walking around the supermarkets. And what I quickly kind of concluded was that the wine industry is really stuffy, really old school, really heavily male dominated. But there's also no functional option. You know, those mini bottles of wine, you wouldn't swig them on the go. Those cups with the foil don't exist anymore because they're just so embarrassing to be seen with and clearly not functional at all. And you only need to look at the space that gin and tonic in a can was taking up and that beer in a can was taking up. And you could see how much those categories were taking off. And we then actually bought a bit of data which really showed us the size of those categories. So from all of my research, everything was just pointing in the direction of this is really the right product to launch. And I pitched the idea to Jeremy. I was quite nervous because I really wanted to do it. I was really bought into it and I really hoped that he would be as well. And he had the same reaction as I did, was very excited by it. And then we did a lot more homework and research, really, really a lot. And that is a big piece of advice I'd give to people. Really do validate your idea beyond just your family, who are obviously going to tell you it's great, and really research the market. And then we decided to go for it and put a bit of our own money into it. And we worked for a year on setting up the business. We were very lucky. We were both consultants at the same time. So we managed our own time, and our sort of consulting businesses could fund the initial stages of Nice. And then we got the business to a stage where we had a great looking brand, great liquid to go in the cans. And then we quite quickly got Sainsbury's interested and we agreed a 500 store listing. So then we needed to go and raise money for that to produce the stock. And then we launched Nice in March 2019.
Amazing. That's a good place to raise from, that you already had a contract in place, so the prospective investors could see exactly why you needed the cash. You mentioned a piece of advice to prospective people starting out to do their research beyond your immediate family. What type of research are you talking about? Is that creating a business plan and then feeding in? You mentioned that you bought some data. You know, how can you go about best, rather than gut feeling, exploring your market?
Yes, it's a really good question because we didn't have much money to do it. So I would probably advise three different things. It obviously depends on the business you're launching. So for us, launching a consumer product, understanding the data around the product you're launching is quite important. So we invested £1,000 of our own money in buying some Nielsen data. Nielsen are the company that look after all of the data in the supermarket, which tells you, you know, which deodorant's selling the best. So we bought some data that told us the size of mini bottles of wine and then the growth from the year before and the size of the ready-to-drink cocktails in cans. And £1,000 is a lot of money, but that data was probably the best investment we made in that year because we could use that data in all of our buyer conversations, in all of our investment conversations, and really all of the key conversations in the business. So we did that. And then I also spent about 2 days walking around corner shops, supermarkets, anywhere that sells, you know, alcohol in London. And I'd go in and I'd see if they stock mini bottles of wine, ready to drink cocktails in cans. And I'd talk to the shop manager about how well they perform and how well they sell. So I could just learn as much as possible. And then the third thing we did in order to decide what type of wine to put into the can, we got 25 of our friends in a room and we did some different blind wine tastings. We did a, you know, a questionnaire. That whole thing probably cost us £100. We had a soda stream where we were making some wine fizzy and some wine not. And then we just started to learn actually, you know, what is driving people towards buying wine? Is it, you know, is it the provenance? Is it the vintage? Is it the grape variety? So those are the three main things that we did. And then we also, a lot of people are really scared to say their business idea because they think someone's going to steal it. But I would probably say just go for it. You know, I don't think someone's going to steal it. So we just spoke to everyone we knew about it, anyone we could ring, any contacts in the industry. We, you know, we looked into our black book and we just got really talking to people about our idea. So all of those things are relatively cheap other than the data.
Yeah, that also sounds quite a fun thing to do, the last blind tasting. So you can make your research fun too. And so all of that, then did you pull that into a business plan versus investment deck? So you obviously then got the contract with Sainsbury's, so you needed to go out and raise money. What documents did you go out to raise money with?
Yes, so not very many, actually. We didn't write a really traditional old school business plan, you know, getting the template online and writing the introduction. And I don't know, I feel like those types of documents, certainly for my industry, are a little bit outdated. So we did a few things. So we first of all built our forecast, which was what we thought we could sell in the first 3 years of trading, the types of customers we'd be selling into, and the revenue in those individual customers and then channels. And then from there, we also had our cash flow forecast and our profit and loss, which had, you know, everything in there from who we're going to hire to all of the costs of the business in the first 1 to 2 years. And then we also built an investment deck, which basically needs to look really amazing. And then it's got those documents I first explained kind of backing up everything in it. So we had our investment deck, which had a number of different things in. I think off the top of my head, first of all, that had a bit of an introduction to Jeremy and I, because people are investing in Jeremy and I kind of almost first and foremost. So we wanted to show investors that between us, we had 15 years combined experience in the industry, and we worked with over 30 food and drink businesses. We also had experience with all of the customers that we were trying to get our product into, Sainsbury's, Tesco, etc. We then had information on what actually Nice is. It's a canned wine, and then the more detail on that. So where's the wine from? What's the can size? What's the shelf life? What's the pack size, etc.? And then we had our sort of route to market slides, which were showing the investors exactly where we were going to get this product into and what was the staged approach of going to market. We had a lot of marketing information in there. Who are we marketing this product at? What's the moment? What's our year one marketing budget going to look like? What's the team going to look like? And then we had the P&L as just one page, because then you can send them all of the other financial documents they need to know about. So I think in a nutshell, that was it. And then that demonstrated to the investors how we were going to spend their money on the marketing, on the team, on the distribution, etc. So it was probably about 20 slides in total, and it looked really amazing. We printed it out into a booklet, and that's what we took to our investment meetings.
And which type of investors did you, I know we talked a little bit about investment jargon and pre-seed and seed rounds and things like that, friends and family. You obviously put a little bit of your own money in first for the data and the research. When you got that contract, how much did you kind of want to raise, and where did you, were you tempted to look at VC, or did, what are the stages and where are you now?
Yes, so we were not tempted to look at VC, to answer that question directly.
Why not?
It was definitely too early for that. We wanted to bring on board family and friends and angel investors. I think there are lots of positives of getting VC money in, but also lots of negatives. It puts you under a lot of pressure, and we weren't, you know, already launching a company as a lot of pressure. And we were definitely too early for that. And I don't think VCs would have been interested in us at that pre-launch stage. So we'd got the business to a point where we had invested some of our own money, which we were very lucky to be able to afford to do. And I understand that a lot of people out there can't, but I think if you can afford to do that, it's really fantastic for two reasons. When you actually spend your own money on the business, it just create, well, certainly for me, it just created this kind of energy and drive and determination, more so than I think in my first business, I didn't put my own money in. It also shows investors that you've got skin in the game. But for us, it was so good that we could get the business to a stage where we did have an amazing looking brand, we did have great wine, and then we already had a Sainsbury's listing lined up. So it's a pretty compelling story to go to investors with. We did think about doing it on day one with no name and no brand, and I'm so glad that we didn't.
So is that the first year that the two of you managed to sort of bootstrap your way through?
Exactly. We both bootstrapped our way through for the first year. And then once we had the Sainsbury's listing lined up, when you produce one can, you have to produce 100,000 per wine. So we didn't have enough money to produce, you know, 200,000 cans. And we wanted to bring people onto our journey. So the way we've gone about every investment round, we've done two. We do have a relatively casual approach to investing and investor meetings. And I think that's because we're quite lucky that we've got a pretty good black book of people now that we've worked in the industry for kind of 15 years. So what we did is we sort of made a list of everyone that we wanted to talk to. And that was high net worth individuals that we knew. That was a few friends and family that we knew were interested. But it was also people in the industry that actually mainly Jeremy had worked for, because I'd never worked for anyone else. I'd only worked for myself. Jeremy led on our investment rounds. He's led on both, and he did a fantastic job. And we set up meetings, and we set them up in a way that we were asking for advice. So we said, look, we're now at the stage where we're raising. can we come and practice the pitch on you? And that was really nice because that just instantly created quite a casual environment. And so we went to a few of these meetings and we did the practice, the pitch. Obviously, we knew that we were trying to get the money. And the pitch, it was impressive. As I've explained, we already had a Sainsbury's listing lined up. We had great wine. We had great brand. We had the data that we'd bought, which was obviously very exciting. So in those practice pitches, the people we were practicing to became quite interested. And we managed to, after those meetings, you know, they expressed their interest. And we did manage to raise that money. It was initially £350,000 in a couple of weeks, because once you've got a couple of big names on board, people get FOMO and, you know, they don't want to miss out.
Did you say that you were, you know, opening and closing the round in that 2 weeks? So were you quite, you know, it was a casual environment in the way that you were pitching, but you had a time frame that you wanted to do it, because otherwise it can just go on and on. Did you give them a deadline?
We did, yes. It was the month of September, I remember it. We said we are going to start raising on the 1st of September, closing on the 30th, and then we did manage to close it in 2 weeks.
That is incredible. Well done.
Yeah, it was good, but it was, you know, it was the data and it was everything I've just explained, and then it was that we were very lucky and we were already, you know, pretty well connected.
In those 2 weeks when you had the meetings, like, what would you say was your best pitch out of them and why? And is there one that stands out where you weren't quite happy with it and why as well?
Not really to both of those questions, because, as I said, it was set up in such a casual, meeting friends, having a cup of coffee. Wait, like, I think a lot of people think like pitching's like Dragon's Den and you're standing in this room with this big screen and you're getting like grilled on the numbers. And yeah, we got asked a few questions, but there was one I've just remembered. I don't think there was one that went better than the others, but there was one where we went to meet this person that's in the industry. I won't say who it is.
Yeah.
And we got really grilled, actually. We got really, really grilled. And we just said, look, if you're not into it, that's absolutely fine. We actually wouldn't want to take your money if you're not fully... Yeah, and then it was quite funny. We went away and they said they'd be in touch. And then literally within a few hours, the investment round closed. So we let them know out of courtesy. And they were almost a bit peeved.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is an important thing as well. When you're kind of conscious that you want to really get on with your journey and that you need the funds to do that. But actually, you know, it is a relationship you're getting into with an investor.
I definitely agree. I think you do need to check out who your investors are. What are their expectations? Our investors are the most incredible group of people that say to us, don't waste your time doing loads of reports. This is, again, why I wouldn't take VC money in those early stages. You know, don't waste your time doing loads of reports on us. We want you to just be going on and getting on with the business and driving the business forward. We're here if you need any advice, but you guys just go and do your thing.
So do you have like board meetings and things like that, or?
So we do a quarterly investor update every quarter, and we used to do quite a snazzy slides and stuff, and actually we now just do one big email with all of the key points. We have a board, so we've got an incredible chairman, a guy called Shilan Patel, and we have, I guess, monthly board meetings with him, but he is our board at the moment. It's just three of us. We are looking to grow that, and we have had some new investors come on board that I think we might get involved with, but at the moment it's just Shilan and us.
Mm. And so you raised 350. How did you have a minimum check size from people? So you didn't want people like investing 500 quid, 1,000. Did you say a minimum of like 10 or something?
Exactly. It was a minimum of 10.
Yeah. And do you think that that's important? Because, you know, lots of people go out and kind of can do like seeders and get loads of people invested. But for you, was it more just having the right people and smart money?
Exactly. And the admin, if someone could put in £10 here and there, the admin in all of the documents that come with that was just a lot of work, would be a lot of work.
So where did the 350 get you to? And you mentioned that you've just brought some new investors on board. So was that just a kind of an additional round at same valuation, or you've had growth? So it's like...
We did the initial seed and then we did do a top-up round, which we don't sort of really count as a sort of full raise, because the reason why we did the top-up round was because we were launching some new products, but also we had our chairman and a non-exec director come on board and they wanted to put some money in. So we got that money in. But then most recently, we have done another round. I guess, I don't know what you'd call it, because I get so muddled with all of those things. We've just done our second investment round, is what we call it. And we've done that because we've had a very strong year this year, and we want to bring on more capital in order to launch new products. We've got quite a strong new product pipeline, but also grow our team and then really supercharge our marketing. So we've just closed an investment round with a bigger valuation, yes, because we have gone through growth. And it was our real aim in this investment round to bring on board one strategic male and one strategic female investor, which we have managed to do. So we've brought on Grace Beverly, who's a big influencer and business owner. I'm sure you probably know her.
She's been on my other podcast.
She's been on your other podcast. And then they led this round with half of our investors also following on. And then we brought on board a few other angels and high net worth individuals.
Why did you want to get a strong female kind of strategic investor too?
We are a very strong female business. We have 9 female employees and 1 male employee. That hasn't been done deliberately. It's just the way we fall. But, you know, Nice, anyone needs to, only needs to look at Nice and see that, you know, we're a female first brand. We're also inclusive of men, but we very much do talk to women. And what we realized was that actually our cap table wasn't even. It did have too many men. And I think it's only 14% of angel investment goes to females in the UK. So we put out a post on LinkedIn and Instagram when we were doing this raise, asking for more female investors to come forward and telling people about some of the statistics around, you know, how few females invest and how few female businesses get investment. And from that round, we managed to get 7 more female investors on board, people just reacting to our post.
Wow.
But also we said to our team, who, if we could get one female big name investor on board, who would you guys want? And all of our team said Grace Beverly. And so I then contacted Grace Beverly's PA assistant and said, hi, we're big fans of Grace. We're doing an investment round. We'd love to get our deck in front of her. And then we did get our deck in front of her. And then she came back asking for a phone call. And Jeremy and I had a sort of hour on the phone with her. And then she decided to invest. So it was quite a nice story, really, that really came from our team saying, we think that Grace Beverly would be fantastic. So she's come on board.
The point there with, so 14% of angel investments done by women, was that the stat?
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's less than 1p in every pound of venture capital that goes to female-founded teams.
Yes.
So
yeah, sorry, my stat was wrong.
No, your stat's right. It's just a different one for VCs. Yours is on angel.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's the same thing that like a limited amount are going. And yeah, looking at the cap table, again, you know, you can have partners, but when it's not cap table equal either, then we still have this problem where like not enough women are actually having, as you say, skin in the game. You started your first business with another female. Where did you find the confidence to start?
I guess when you're, I was really young. I was like 23. I was seriously naive. Like I didn't even know what a margin was. I didn't, you know, what a P&L was. I didn't know anything. But I've never lacked confidence. I am someone that's really lucky. I've always been very confident. But I didn't know what I was doing. And I guess because I was a confident person, that then gave me the confidence to just, I just used to email anyone in the industry that I'd never met before, ring them and just say, hi, I'm Lucy, I've got this business idea, would you mind if I spoke to you for half an hour? So I just had the confidence to do that, whereas I guess a lot of people would be very scared to do that, and they might think, oh, you know, that's embarrassing, or oh, they're gonna ignore me.
So that's a very interesting point. It's actually the confidence to be vulnerable and say, I don't know all the answers, and then that's
And I'm someone that I love saying that. I love, you know, not knowing stuff and then finding out a way to work it out. And I'm not embarrassed to do that. And I don't feel vulnerable doing that.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has to learn at some point, don't they? You mentioned that you had many highs and many lows in your first business. What are the biggest lessons that you learned from it? And then probably in particular to like financing and investors. You know, you sold it at the end. What were your biggest takeaways?
My biggest takeaway was really understanding the category and being a very data-driven business. At Cuckoo, we didn't know even what a category was. So we didn't understand the size of the yogurt category in the UK, the size of the Bershka Muesli category in the UK, which is tiny. We just thought our idea was great and thought we like it, so everyone else does. So it was definitely my approach with NICE and really delving down into the data before we even got going. And now we have an entire data section of our business, which is always analyzing data. And that's really like the way we make our decisions in our business, with a bit of gut feel as well. But it was really probably that would have been my biggest takeaway, really understanding the market that you are about to start operating in.
Mm. And then when you successfully raise and have money, a lot of people like building out product, but what would you say is the kind of blend for you between building out product and actually marketing spend?
So for us, with this most recent investment round, it is going to be deployed into growing our team. So I think that that's a hugely important part, certainly for us. You know, having the right people in your business. We're now a team of 12, we'll be a team of 14 by kind of February, March time, and having the right people there to drive the business forward, that share your same vision, your same passion, that are an entirely cultural fit. So for us, it's all about finding people that are like serious hustlers, like seriously curious, or like 100%, you know, go that extra mile to get that sale or whatever it is. So investing in your team, because you know, Jeremy and I are great and very capable, but where we want to take NICE, we can't do that alone with two people. So investing in our team, and then yes, for us, because we've got new products coming, investing in product, and then also the business is at a stage whereby our distribution is probably ahead of our marketing, which is great, because distribution is a fantastic way of building brand fame. But I think the business is now at a stage where the marketing sort of needs to catch up. So next year we want to have bigger marketing plans and a bigger marketing budget to come with that.
So investing in the team, and then you kind of mentioned in the deck that it was a lot about you, and then you had your P&L slide. What is, you know, the plan for the business? And you've talked about VC and the pressures that can do, and it doesn't sound necessarily something that's particularly of interest to you now. Would you ever get involved with VC, or would you want to get to a stage where you have private equity, or like, will you put it on the London Stock Exchange? Like, where do you want to exit? Do people want to know, the investors, like when you'd be looking to sell? So what's the plan? Because we obviously love what you're doing, you're committed, but people do want to know when they're going to get their return.
Yes, exactly. So the plan is to not raise money again. That is the plan, but whether that happens, we'll see. And then the plan is to just keep doing what we're doing. This year's been a very strong year for us. We've got even bigger plans for next year and the year after, to really establish ourselves as a future wine company with a variety of different products that really think about the consumer moment, what is the best liquid and what is the best format for those different consumer moments. Jeremy and I have always been very, very open that we want to exit this business within the next 3 to 5 years. There are a few things that are really important to us: building a brand that totally outlives us, and then eventually selling the business to the right owner. Because I think so many times fantastic businesses have sold and they've gone, you know, the quality's gone and the marketing has gone after that. I think there are also some examples of businesses that have done it very well. I think Ben and Jerry's is a fantastic example. They sold to Unilever, but they've really kept their core values. You know, they're a B Corp business. The product quality has never wavered. So finding the right person to sell it to. But we want to get it to a stage whereby we have built it as much as we think we possibly can, and we need to give it on to the next gatekeeper to really take it to the next level. And if we could get there without VC money, I think that that would be our preference. But I think our mentality is sort of, you know, don't think about who that's going to be or what that's going to look like yet. Yes, we have a bit of a timing in our head, but keep doing what we're doing and we will attract the right person to get into the conversation with.
Is it a worry though, if you grow it to a stage where it's just so big that it might be tricky to exit? Is there like a sweet spot?
There is a sweet spot in our mind, yeah.
Excellent. Of fundraising stories, I think yours is probably the most positive that I've heard.
It's probably quite annoying though, because it's so positive, and I guess it makes it sound so easy. So it isn't easy, but we were quite experienced and set up, you know, in the right way. But
yeah, that experience was really, really comes across. And I think with the years of consultancy as well, and seeing like you're absolutely on it across all points, it's
But also loads of businesses, like, look at the guy that set up Goo Puddings. He didn't have, you know, any experience in the FN. So there have also been loads of businesses, Propercorn, where the founders came with zero experience. So that shouldn't be putting off to people.
Yeah. I was going to say, as one parting piece of advice to a female founder, because that's what the podcast is, starting a business and going out, what's your main tip?
I think just own it. Like, I am in an industry that is probably 85% male dominated. I pretty much walk into every room and I'm the only female. And just, I know, I understand why lots of people would find that really intimidating and they're the odd one out. But I really like to encourage women to see that as a really good thing, because instantly you're walking into a room and you're different. And so you're going to bring a different way of thinking. I always use the baby food example. So before women entered baby food, it was always in those jars with those spoons, right? And that's like the most annoying way of eating baby food, because the food goes everywhere. And it was only when women started working in baby food that they said, look, actually, guys, this is rubbish. We're the ones mainly feeding the babies. We should be doing it in these pouches. So you're going to bring a different way of thinking. So just see that as a really positive thing and just own it and get excited by it. And that's sort of one of the rules I live by.
You've been listening to Fundraising as a Female Founder with me, Alice Audley. If you have any questions, suggestions for future guests, or want to get in touch, please contact me through my new website, aliceaudley.com, or tweet me at Alice Audley. That's AUDLEY.